Can I pause us there again, please? Any comments or questions or observations arising out of that bit that I've just offered you? Please, David.
We were just talking about what you were saying about you not knowing what to expect when you got married and what would happen over a period of 35 years. But I thought at the same time that even though you didn't know that, you were actually compelled to do what you did. In the same way that I didn't care whether I was going to live in a tent with my wife, I wanted to marry her, and that was it. Yeah. When I think back to the time that I became converted to a Christian, which was just through reading a book, really, which actually turned me over, I didn't have a clue what to expect, but there was a kind of a compulsion about it, in the same way that there was when I got married. And I just think that with Matthew, okay, Matthew may have had his hand on his money and he may have been reaching out to God at the same time, but even though he didn't know what was going to happen, I just wonder whether there was a kind of a compulsion about that as well and that he just had to go. So I'm just wondering to what extent in those circumstances that choice comes in. I'm just wondering whether there actually is one.
Okay, that's helpful, thank you. I think we could reflect on that in a number of ways, couldn't we? I mean, clearly sometimes the nature of a choice is so compelling that you feel you have no option. Certainly I felt I had no option in what I perceived to be my call to ordination. You know, from that time, there's just no other possibility. I didn't know where to go, no other possibility. Sometimes choices are more rational. And I think certainly even within the nature of choosing to be Christian, I think there are a number of, clearly a number of different ways into it and a number of different sorts of choices. And I guess if we were to check out in the room, you know, how people here first felt a call to be Christian and secondly felt a call to ministry, how that might play out. And I suspect there are some who felt that compelling, I've got no choice really. And there are others for whom they went through a much longer, maybe more rational process. And maybe we need both of those to be present. And that it needs ultimately, I suppose, the conversion of both our rationality and our emotion, our mind and our heart. And I suspect the same is true in marriage, isn't it? I mean, although one might fall deeply in love and feel compelled to marry, you've got to be practical at some stage as well. Even if you've got to find a second-hand tent to live in, you've still got to be practical as well, haven't you? And I think the same was true of the earliest disciples, wasn't it? Because although some of the initial callings seemed to be immediate and they were compelled, at the same time, there's a lot of background preparation had gone on for them and for the Jewish people. So, I mean, you know, Peter and Andrew don't come out of nothing. Peter and Andrew, I suspect, come out of years of faithful listening to Scripture and prayer. Now, maybe Jesus was perceptive enough to know it was that one and not that one. I think the nature of call is something which involves a number of elements, even if it seems to be instantaneous. Rodney.
David, I've just been reminded by the discussions that we've been having about something that I read written by Jonathan Sacks, the chief rabbi, about the difference between contract and covenant. And that contract is something which we're very into in our age, where two individuals each give something in order that each individually will benefit, as when you buy and sell a house. But covenant is a different thing, and it's covenant that the Old Testament and the New Testament both talk about. And that's when two people come together to try and achieve together something that neither of them on their own would be able to achieve. So we talked about a God of vengeance just now. It's not so much a God of vengeance as if you break the covenant, you no longer can benefit from achieving the things that together you would have been able to achieve. And that the call that we are asked to enter into is a call of covenant, a marriage is a covenant, two people coming together to do things that they wouldn't be able to do on their own.
Thank you, Rod. That's really helpful. I think the book he wrote about that, and it's The Home We Build Together, isn't it, which he published about 4 or 5 years ago. It's a brilliant book because it's on specifically these subjects of how we manage choice and how we manage living together in diversity. And I think, I mean, one of the worries, I suppose, about premarital contracts is that it's saying this is not a covenant, you know. I'm not in this for whatever happens. I'm in this within limited boundaries. And that's what's happening in much of our social negotiation at the moment, isn't it? So we've bought the utilitarian concept of a social covenant, a social contract, but not of a covenant. So we're in our social contracts with a limited agreement. I'll stay with you for so long, but not beyond that. It reminds me when the David Jenkins affair was at its height in the 1980s. Do you remember the David Jenkins and resurrection stuff? It was very exciting. I actually went for a haircut in my local barber shop when I was then living in Gloucester, and the man cutting my hair started talking about the resurrection. He didn't start with where you're going for your holidays then. As they usually do. But I sat down and he said, tell me about this resurrection stuff. It was amazing. Anyway, I remember David Jenkins at General Synod in 85, I think it was, in his famous speech that was headlined as the Bag of Bones speech, when the Daily Mail headlined, Bishop of Durham says the resurrection was a conjuring trick with a bag of bones. And what he said, I was there, he said the resurrection was not a conjuring trick with a bag. And that little word made such a difference. But one thing he did say, and I'm sort of getting there by steps to what is relevant to what Rodney said. One thing he did say was that the nature of Anglicanism is that it's a covenant between very different types of Christians. And I might not agree with what you say. I might think you're a plonker and you're totally wrong. But I'm going to stay with you. Whatever you say, whatever you do, I'm going to stick with you. I'm not going to take my ball home. And he said that is of the essence of Anglicanism, that we stick together. We are committed together to being a particular type of church in the community for this nation with gospel and sacrament and doing it together, doing it as a united people. And once we lose that, the other bits, in a sense, everybody else has got. Everybody's got word and sacrament and pastoral care, etc., etc. What they haven't got is this huge diversity within a single church. And once we lose that, then we lose our calling to be Anglican. We actually, the covenant has split. We're into contracts. We're into, you know, the misnamed Anglican covenant, which is going through synods and has just been referred to dioceses, is a disaster. Total disaster. If you haven't read it, read it, because the diocese is going to have to debate it at the end of this year. But what it's in effect saying is I will stay with provinces in the worldwide Anglican Communion as long as they agree with me and do what I say. And if they don't, we can throw them out. Disastrous. David.
Right. Now, I just wanted to say that isn't that kind of narrow view exactly what First David was telling us yesterday evening is pre-Damascus Paul? You may join us so long as you are like us and do it just the way we do it. And if you're different and want to stay different, we don't want to know.
I think also we need to remember that the C of E is absolutely full of structures that we like to keep. They make us feel safe, our structures. And so when we're allowing people to just follow, we're frightened of that form of free fall that we're offering them. Because I think the structures have meant we've stopped having faith. We must have faith that God is there. We cling to our systematic theology and our head knowledge. We should just allow people's hearts to be filled with God. And we don't trust God to do that.
think I must say yes and, probably, because I think although the structures can be limiting of the spirit, sometimes structures can enable spirit, and sometimes structures can be things within which the spirit works. And all my temperament is with freedom. All my temperament is to say, don't restrain people at all. Just let them go. Let them be themselves. Let them whatever. I suppose the other part of me says that certainly in educational terms, children learn better when they have well-structured classes and lessons. Now, some children are, geniuses, and you can set them going and they do it all themselves. But for most kids, and my wife spent most of her life as an infant and junior teacher, for most kids, if they know the structure of the day, and if they know they're going to do English, then they're going to do maths, and if they know where their books are, that gives them the freedom to learn. If the class is chaotic, and if they don't know what's happening next, and if they don't know what time break is and whether they're going to get any dinner or not, then they don't learn very well. And I think for all human life, there's this enormous tension between God says, set my people free, let my people go. That's right at the core of the Hebrew scripture is freedom. Freedom to worship, freedom to be, freedom for everything else. And yet at the same time, God says, here are 10 commandments. We'll end for coffee because it's time with the little story, which I'm sure you know. So I'll come back to you after coffee. I won't forget. I promise.
I was going to say, that's fine, so long as you don't worship the structures.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And you know the one, no doubt, about Moses coming down from the mountain and saying, well, there's good news and there's bad news. I've got him down to 10, but adultery's still in. Coffee time.